Chapter 30. Murphy came out of the building about 10 seconds after I did. Thomas answered his phone, said he was on the way. He sounded kind of out of it, though. I called both rooms, but the call went straight to the hotel's voicemail, she reported, slipping her cell phone away as she approached me.
Does it do that by itself?
No, you have to call the desk and ask for it.
Damn it, I said, and tossed her my keys. Vescavis thought of that already. Drive.
Murphy blinked at me but turned to the Beetle at once.
Why?
I'm going to try to reach Elaine my way, I said. I hurried around my car to the passenger seat and jerked open the door.
Get us there as fast as you can.
Magic on the road? Won't that kill the car?
This car? Probably not, I said. I hope not. I threw my staff in the back seat.
Ow! Shrieked a voice. Murphy's gun came out every bit as fast as I raised my blasting rod, its tip glowing with a scarlet incandescence.
Don't shoot, don't shoot! Squeaked the voice, considerably more panicked.
There was a flickering, and then Molly appeared in my back seat, legs curled up against her chest, her eyes wide, her face very pale.
Molly! I shouted. Damn it, what do you think you're doing?
I came to help. I was good enough to track down your car, wasn't I?
I told you to stay home.
Because of the stupid bracelet? She demanded. That has got to be the lamest scam ever. Yoda never gave anybody a bracelet that...
I whirled in frustration and snarled, Fuego!
My raw anxiety and rage lashed from the tip of my blasting rod in a lance of blinding scarlet fire. It blasted into a metal trash can in front of Marcone's building and... Well, it would be bragging to say that it vaporized the trash can. Even I would have trouble with that. It did, however, slag the thing into a shower of molten metal as it gouged a 2-foot-deep coffin-length furrow in the concrete of the sidewalk behind it. Chunks of heated concrete and globs of molten metal hit the building's exterior, cracking several thick panes of glass, pocking stone walls, and leaving several wooden planters on fire. The concussion rattled every window within 100 yards and shattered the casing of the nearest streetlight so that it cast out fractured illumination. 6 car alarms went off. I turned back to Molly and found her staring at me with her mouth open until my shadow, cast by the rising fires and crippled streetlight, fell across her. My voice came out in a growl.
I am not Yoda.
I stripped the glove off my left hand and held it up, my fingers spread. It didn't look as horrific as it used to, but it was plenty ugly enough to make an impression on a 19-year-old girl.
This isn't a goddamn movie, Molly. Screw up here and you don't vanish and leave an empty cloak. You don't get frozen in carbonite, and you should damn well know that by now.
She looked shocked. I'll curse from time to time, but I don't generally indulge in blasphemy. At least not around Michael or his family. I don't think God is terribly threatened by my occasional slip of the tongue, but I owe enough to Michael to respect his wishes regarding that particular shade of profanity, mostly. Hell, the whole practice of invective was developed to add extra emphasis when the mere meaning of words alone just wasn't enough, and I was feeling plenty emphatic. Snarling, I cupped my left hand, focused my ongoing anger, and a sudden sphere of light and heat blossomed to life. It wasn't big, about the diameter of a dime, but it was as bright as a tiny sun.
Harry, Murphy said, her voice was a little shaky, we don't have time for this.
You think you're ready? I told Molly. Show me.
I blew on the sphere, and it wafted out of my hand and glided smoothly into the open door of the Beetle and toward Molly's face.
What?
She said. Stop it, I said, my voice cold. If you can. She swallowed and raised a hand. I saw her try to control her breathing and focus her will, her lips blurring over the steps I taught her. The sphere drifted closer. Better hurry, I added. I did nothing to hide the anger or the taint of derision in my voice. Beads of sweat broke out on her skin. The sphere slowed, but it had not stopped. It's about 1200 degrees, I added. It'll melt sand into glass. It doesn't do much for skin, either. Molly lifted her left hand and stammered out a word, but her will fluttered and failed,
amounting to nothing more than a handful of sparks. "Bad guys don't give you this much time," I spat. Molly hissed, give the kid credit, she didn't let herself scream, and pressed herself as far as she could from the fire. She threw up an arm to shield her eyes. For a second, I felt a mad impulse to let the fire continue for just a second more. "Nothing teaches like a burned hand," whispered a darker part of myself. "I should know." But I closed my fingers, willed the ending of the spell, and the sphere vanished. Murphy, standing across the car, just stared at me. Molly lowered her hand, her arm moving in frightened little jerks. She sat there shivering and staring, her tongue piercing rattled against her teeth. I looked at both of them and then shook my head. I got control of my rampaging temper. Then I leaned down and stuck my head in the car, looking Molly in the eyes. "We play for keeps, kid," I said quietly. "I've told you before, magic isn't a solution to every problem. You still aren't listening." Molly's eyes, frightened and angry, filled with tears. She turned her head away from me and said nothing. She tried not to make any noise, but it's tough to keep a good poker face when a snarling madman nearly burns it off. There wasn't any time to waste, but I gave the kid a few seconds of space while I tried to let my head cool off.